this morning. The first one is number 20-2233, Philbrook v. McDonough. Mr. Carpenter. You can take your mask off if you'd like.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Kenneth Carpenter appearing on behalf of Mr. Gary Philbrook. At issue in this appeal is the meaning of the language used by Congress in 38 U.S.C. 1513C. This statute expressly prohibits the VA from paying awards of TDIU benefits, total disability based upon individual unemployability, during any period during which the veteran is incarcerated in a federal, state, local, or other penal institution or correctional facility for the conviction of a felony. The Veterans Court erroneously concluded that Mr. Philbrook's circumstances were covered by the plain meaning of the terms used by Congress in this statute. This was a misinterpretation of the unambiguous language used by Congress.
So, Mr. Carpenter, that's actually my first question I wanted to confirm. You're not saying that the statute's ambiguous. You're saying it unambiguously doesn't cover these circumstances.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
Well, what about in terms of the purpose of the statute? Is there any reason why Congress would want to distinguish between confinement in a prison and confinement in a mental hospital pursuant to a plea of not guilty by reason of insanity or similar plea?
I believe that issue is beyond the inquiry of this court in this case, that the reasoning...
I understand you're saying the plain language is the plain language, but I'm asking you in terms of the purpose of the statute, is there a reason that Congress might want to distinguish between those two situations?
I cannot think of a specific reason why they would, but I would suggest by its absence that it must be concluded or inferred by this court that Congress intended not to include that. This circumstance is entirely different than the circumstance described in the statute. The statute describes incarceration in a correctional facility. This is confinement in a mental institution. Those are clearly separate categories or classifications of circumstances in which veterans would find themselves. And even though there may be a reason to infer an intent of Congress, it is the fact that Congress did not include this category within, which they clearly could have and clearly were capable of doing, is the difference between why this interpretation relied upon by the Veterans Court is inconsistent with law.
There's no doubt that he wasn't able to leave from the hospital, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So he was confined.
He was committed involuntarily under a state law that provided that he would stay there until a separate commission, a non-penal commission, determined whether or not his mental condition had restored itself. And he spent a considerable length of time, I believe it's 7 or 8 years, in the mental institution, during which time he did not apply for this benefit, then applied for the benefit, and the benefit was adjudicated by the regional office as though there were entitlement.
Well, is the government correct that you're no longer arguing that he wasn't convicted of a felony?
I have not made that argument before this court. That is correct, okay. Your Honor. In our view, there is no distinction under the statute. In our view, there is a distinction under the statute between the reason for the conviction of the felony. In Mr. Philbrook's case, it's conviction of a felony based upon a guilty plea of insanity at the time of the commission of the crime, which was made and accepted by a state court. And under state law, he was involuntarily committed to a mental institution.
Okay, let me just, are you arguing the issue of the pro-veteran canon alternatively?
Yes.
Okay, because if it's unambiguous, it wouldn't come into play.
Absolutely, Your Honor. It simply, in the event that this court would determine that there is ambiguity, which would be contrary to the interpretation relied upon by the Veterans Court, that that ambiguity should be interpreted under the pro-veterans canon in favor of Mr. Philbrook.
Mr. Carpenter, yes. I think you know that correctional facility was added to the statute. It's an amendment. It wasn't in the original language of the statute. It was just penal institution.
Yes.
What do you think correctional institution means? What does it add in excess of penal institution?
That the person is serving a sentence under a facility that was designed for that purpose, that the conviction of the felony.
I mean, I understand that. I mean, the government makes a similar circular. I mean, it sounds a little circular to me, and the government makes a similar circular argument. I'm just a little confused as to, except for the express legislative history, which talks about just making sure there is no public-private distinction, if you think there's any content to correctional facility, or is it just another word used for penal institutions in our regular parlance?
I believe it is simply an alternative description of the same thing as a penal facility or penal institution.
So let me ask you another question, and I apologize because I didn't look and I just thought of this now, mm-hmm. and it's not in the briefs. Are you aware of any provision in these statutes that would prohibit the VA from paying TDIU benefits for somebody that is involuntarily committed under a civil order to a mental hospital rather than, as we have here, some type of like criminal proceeding?
Yeah. No, I'm not sure. As far as I know, there is no such regulatory provision that has been created by the Secretary.
So if we're just talking in terms of what I think the government points out a lot, a legislative history, that the government shouldn't be paying TDIU when the taxpayer is already paying for the person to be, you know, provided for otherwise, that argument is somewhat on point in terms of prisons, but it goes too far when we're talking about civil commitments.
Yes,
because sir. Those people would likewise be maintained by taxpayer funds.
That's correct. Yeah.
Which perhaps suggests a distinction in terms of the purpose of the statute between the veteran's culpability. In other words,
yes.
If you're guilty of a crime, you're not going to get TDIU, but if you're committed for mental treatment.
And I think culpability
doesn't exist there.
I think culpability is a distinguishing factor between the classification of veterans who would have committed a felony and are incarcerated in a penal or correctional institution versus a veteran who commits a crime that resulted from a lack of a mental capacity to form the intent to do that. And at least under Oregon state law, he is permitted to plead guilty and be confined to a mental institution, which is precisely what happened here and is not contemplated by the plain language of the statute.
But, all right, that's all. That's not in the statute, though, right? The fact that there's a different level of culpability.
No, Your Honor, it's not. But it's an attempt to distinguish, following Judge Hughes's question, the question of what does it mean for a correctional institution to have been added by Congress. And in other words, the plain language conveys a clear intent by Congress to not allow a TDIU benefit when there was a knowing commission of a crime for which time is being served.
Are you saying that penal institution and correctional facility are one and the same?
I wouldn't go that far, Your Honor. I would simply go so far as to say that they are indistinguishable on their face, that the conviction of a felony results in serving time in a penal institution or in a correctional institution. The distinction between those is not pertinent to this court's inquiry as to whether or not Congress intended to include another classification of veterans.
Okay.
Can I just ask you a couple more questions? Is my understanding, Mr. Philbrook has a scheduler rating that would presumptively entitle him to TDIU. Is that correct?
I wish that were the law, Your Honor, but
It's not. He still has to prove, even if we reverse here on this provision, he has to prove that his PTSD and whatever other conditions he has is causing his unemployability.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And to be clear, I thought it was in the briefs, but Mr. Philbrook has been released, made application, and has been granted. So the VA has made that determination contrary to the determination made by the agency in the first instance here, and the only difference is that the board said it's a matter of law.
So going forward, I'm just mechanically, if we reverse, I'm trying to figure out what we have to tell the Veterans Court. They have to vacate and remand and send it back to the board to determine whether he should get TDIU for whatever period of time it is?
Yes, from the date of the application to the current date, which is post his release. Unless there's further questions, I'll reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you. Ms. Akers?
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the court. The plain language, ordinary meaning of the statute resolves this case. Mr. Philbrook, as confined
in... What authority is there that prison or correctional facility includes a mental hospital? What dictionary definition suggests that that's the case?
I would point, Your Honor, to the Black's Law dictionary definition of correctional facility, although I believe we've argued in our brief that under any definition put forth by the parties in this case, whether it's Black's Law, Merriam-Webster's, or USLegal.com, encompasses Mr. Philbrook's circumstances. But
what is the Black's Dictionary?
The Black's Law Dictionary definition provides that a correctional facility is a place of treatment through confinement. And
I mean, isn't the problem with that argument that it proves too much, because that would include institutions that are purely civil commitments, even if they're involuntary?
It could, Your Honor, but I think where that concern is remedied is later in the statute, 5313, which provides that the veteran has to be incarcerated in the correctional facility for the conviction of a felony. And so I think to Your Honor's previous example, to appellant's counsel, civil commitment or involuntary commitment, for example, that doesn't seem to comport with the conviction of the felony language, which is also required under 5313. And so looking at the Black's Law Dictionary definition, it's a place of confinement treatment.
I understand you want to get back to that Black's
Sure.
Law, but can you just be precise? Where in the statute are you identifying that, which language are you using to include a mental hospital? Is it penal institution or is it correctional facility?
Correctional facility, Your Honor. Although that's what the Veterans Court found and that's what we've argued, although the definition that Mr. Philbrook cited in his brief for penal institution, we believe also encompasses the mental hospital, because the penal institution, as defined by USLegal.com, which Mr. Philbrook cites, encompasses a correctional facility. And so we haven't put forth that definition, but even if the court were to adopt that definition, a state mental institution falls within that definition as well. But I think it's more clearly defined as a correctional facility as defined in Black's Law Dictionary. It's a place of...
Well, if you're going to rely on the correctional facility, how do you get over the fact that the legislative history for that amendment is fairly clear about the point for it, which was, and it calls itself a technical amendment, it doesn't note that it's a broadening amendment, and its sole purpose seems to have been to address a case that was going on at the Veterans Court that may have excluded private prisons versus publicly operated prisons. If that's the sole purpose, to add correctional institution, then isn't the reading of correctional institution simply that it was meant to make clear that private prisons as opposed to public ones were included, and not broaden it to include mental hospitals?
Your Honor, I think that the legislative history and the purpose actually supports our argument, and I understand Your Honor's reference between public and private. That's the Wanless case where this court has already addressed this statute. But the actual legislative history that's addressed in Wanless explains that, sure, this was just a clarifying amendment to add correctional facility, but it is a broad statute, and the purpose of the statute is to prevent duplicative government expenditures. And here, in this case, that purpose is met exactly. Mr. Philbrook was confined in a state mental institution, so his needs were taken care of by the taxpayers.
Can you point me where in the 2006 legislative history? I have the Committee on Veterans Affairs report, which is the only thing I found that was relevant. Is there some place in that that talks about it in the more general terms you're talking about, rather than just addressing the Wanless case?
Rather than just addressing
the Wanless case.
Well, Your Honor, I would point Your Honor to, I just have the citation, which is the one that's cited in the Wanless case, which is Public Law 109-461, Section 1002. And it states that it is a clarifying amendment, technical and clarifying amendment. And as the court in the Wanless case explained, there wasn't a substantive change when this was amended, but it did clarify that a correctional facility is what Congress intended to include in the prohibition of these TDIU benefits. And so I think it's...
Yeah, but the problem is the rest of that goes on to say that there's been a significant growth in the number of privately operated penal facilities, and if the VA or the courts were to conclude that the original language only included public facilities, it will lead to the anomalous result that you would get compensation whether you were in a public or private one. That makes sense. You shouldn't be getting TDIU for committing murder just because you're in a private facility rather than a public facility. But it doesn't say anything about whether something that's not traditionally thought of as a penal institution would be addressed by this amendment.
I agree, Your Honor, that the legislative history doesn't squarely address a state mental hospital, for example. But I think that the court first doesn't even need to get to the legislative history because the plain language of the statute is clear. Both counsel admit it's unambiguous or acknowledge it's
so
unambiguous.
Can I ask you a hypothetical? If somebody is applying for a job and on their form they have to fill out, their background check form, they have to say, have you ever been confined in a penal institution or correctional facility? If somebody had been committed to the Oregon State Hospital, would they have to check yes?
If, Your Honor, the person consulted Black's Law Dictionary, yes.
Well, what about the people at the hospital that are civilly committed? I understand this is not, you might have a better argument if there were this unique mental hospital only for people that otherwise would have been convicted of crimes. But my understanding is that the Oregon State Hospital is a state mental hospital that has both patients that are civilly committed, some voluntarily, and ones that are committed as a result of crimes. Would this, I mean, what's the distinction between those definitionally? I mean, I understand legally, but definitionally, if you're civilly committed and your view is that that's a correctional facility, wouldn't they have to say they were in a correctional facility?
Again, Your Honor, under the Black's Law Dictionary definition, which says correctional facility is a place of confinement for treatment, and if we look at the definition of confinement and treatment,
but it
then
doesn't
yes.
say it is a mental hospital.
That's correct.
And prisons do treat people. I don't see that you can get out of the Black's Law Dictionary the clarity that you're trying to get out of it. It's not saying that every place where you're confined for treatment is a prison or a correctional facility.
That's correct, Your Honor. And in fact, the statute doesn't even use the word prison or jail at all. In fact, it's broader. It uses correctional facility or penal institution. And I understand
it does start out with the word incarcerated, correct?
That's correct.
Which in turn means imprisonment. So I'm not quite sure how someone who's in a mental facility is imprisoned.
Well, Your Honor, and I'm just going back to the Black's Law Dictionary definition, which says confined for the purpose of treatment. And Mr. Philbrook admits that he was confined.
Yeah, but the statute says incarcerated.
That's correct,
Your Honor.
It doesn't
say confined. It says incarcerated.
Well, and there's been no dispute in this appeal or in this case that Mr. Philbrook was not incarcerated. It's not an issue that's ever been raised. And so I think...
Well, but we're supposed to be reading the statute. I mean, we're not allowed to interpret a statute and say because someone didn't point us to a particular part of the statute or that we should just ignore that part of the statute, right?
Right. And I think to remedy Your Honor's concern, Mr. Philbrook has admitted, and you can find in Appendix 1, that he committed a crime, he was arrested, and he was confined for that. So I think that fairly remedies Your Honor's concern that he wasn't incarcerated. He certainly was confined for the conviction of a felony.
When you say he's agreed that he's committed a crime, is that because he's pled guilty but by reason of insanity he doesn't get imprisoned?
Correct, Your Honor.
Well, so let me ask you this. What about the states where instead of having that particular plea, you have a not guilty by reason of insanity and you're a judge not guilty, but you're still committed? Would in that case somebody be ineligible for TDIU benefits because they would have been not guilty of a crime, but they're still in a mental hospital, much in the same situation that this veteran is?
Your Honor, I'm not sure about that hypothetical. I imagine the veteran would make an argument that they were not incarcerated, and maybe there's a state law argument to be made, which was made, in fact, in this case.
They'd argue they weren't convicted, too, right?
Perhaps, Your Honor, but in this case, we're dealing with Oregon state law. Which
sure, but you've got to be consistent, right? I can't imagine that the secretary would argue that whether somebody gets TDIU in these circumstances depends on the particular state law plea applicable to mental insanity. I mean, the secretary never argues for that state-specific application of veterans benefits. So if that would, if not guilty by reason of insanity is a particular plea, then it either has to be included in this language or it's excluded, and the two have to be treated similarly, I would think.
I agree with Your Honor. I think all things being equal, if that were the plea as opposed to the plea that we have in this case, and the person was still confined for the purpose of treatment, I think we would have the same argument looking at the plain language of the statute and referring to the dictionary.
You know, if the statute was so clear, then why did the RO deny the request for completely different reasons and not rely on this supposed bar?
I'm not sure, Your Honor. I think our record is sort of vague or non-existent on that point. But it is
meaningful that the VA itself didn't seem to think that this was an exclusion.
Well, I think it's unclear exactly the basis for that original denial. So I'm not sure that infer
it's that. Not unclear. The original denial was that they didn't think his PTSD was bad enough to make him unemployable. I mean, it's very clear that the original denial had nothing to do with the statute.
Arguably, Your Honor, I think earlier we, to Judge Hughes' question, talked about whether Mr. Philbrook would still have to prove that the reason he's unemployable is the PTSD as opposed to being confined. And so perhaps that was an issue that was going through the RO's head. I am uncertain the reason that the RO didn't flag this particular reason for being not eligible for TDIU. But I do think that Your Honors can just look at plain dictionary definitions and find that Mr. Philbrook has admitted that he's confined. The sentencing docket, which you can find at Appendix 31, says it was for the purpose of treatment. And
do any of the dictionary definitions you cite specifically include a mental hospital or something akin to that in the definition of correctional facility, or are you just arguing by reasons of general purpose?
Your Honor, none of the dictionary definitions specifically call out state mental or mental institution at all. Admit that. However, the definitions don't really talk about specific places. I believe one definition says i.e. prison, but they don't list examples of what would constitute a correctional facility. It just simply provides a definition, and then, of course, we can apply that definition to our circumstances. And
Are you aware – I'm sorry to be – if this is unfair, but – I mean, if you drive up to a correctional facility in states that call them correctional facilities, are any of them ever mental hospitals?
I wish I knew the answer to Turner's question.
Think they're jails. I think some states call their prison system correctional facilities. and some states may still call them penal institutions. I've never seen anything that's remotely akin, and again, this is not in the record, but if it were, if people knew about it, I'm sure we would have, somebody would have cited to us that a mental hospital is called a correctional facility. So it seems to me you are arguing from general language and general dictionary definitions and saying this is the purpose Congress must have intended. But that doesn't get us very far if Congress didn't actually write that statute. And doesn't the Social Security statute, which specifically lays out mental hospitals as another reason for denying benefits in that context, show us that Congress knows how to include mental hospitals when it wants to? And, you know, they, for whatever reason, they didn't do that here. Maybe it was an oversight. Maybe if we say that it doesn't include it, they will respond with a very quick amendment to add it. But why isn't all of this statutory and legislative history, and particularly the fact that correctional institute was added specifically only to address a private public prison, enough to suggest that they just didn't include mental hospitals?
Well, Your Honor, I think correctional facility is a broad term, and so we can start there. The
Well, you keep saying that, but you've never beyond general definitions in Black's Law Dictionary and other dictionary definitions, you've never given me a specific example of a correctional facility that's not a prison.
I understand Your Honor's concern. Our argument would be that the Oregon State Mental Institution is an example. And I just think that the purpose of this 5313 is to avoid the duplicity of government expenditures, and that is the purpose that's being fulfilled here. So I understand Your Honor's concern that we're simply relying on the Black's Law Dictionary, but we believe that to be an appropriate tool of statutory interpretation. It fits the circumstances here. It fits the legislative purpose. And one last point to Your Honor's reference to the Social Security statute, we believe that to be a very unclear argument. I'm not really sure what is to be made of that, but there is a reference to penal institute or correctional facility.
I don't understand what you're saying, what's to be made of that. We often look to statutes and we say when Congress wants to draw a distinction between one thing and another, or another, it knows how to do it. If Congress wants to cover the landscape. And in the Social Security situation, Congress did cover the landscape. And it did not assume that reference to correctional facility or penal institution was enough to encompass the hospitals. It later, in subsections, discussed the hospitals. I don't understand why you say that's an unclear argument.
Well, Your Honor, it's because in that statute, it does reference penal institutions and correctional facilities, just like in our statute. Right. And then in the next subsection, which is cited by Mr. Philbrook, it says institutions at public expense. And I believe those are the institutions.
But then it also references hospitals. In other words, the first reference to penal institutions was not enough.
Your Honor, I don't know that it, and perhaps it does, you probably know better than I do if you're saying it references hospitals, but the subsection that Mr. Philbrook is citing references an institution at public expense. And
sure,
then it explains.
But the whole point of this is that is set out distinct from correctional institution, right? Because the preceding subsection is confined in a jail, prison, other penal institution, or correctional facility, which almost exactly mirrors the language in the VA statute. So they clearly understand that phrase different from the following subsection, which is an institution at public expense in connection with all of those guilty findings by reason of insanity.
Your Honor, I'm not exactly sure how the distinction is being treated in the statute. It's not clear that the reference to an institution at public expense is being treated differently than the penal institution or correctional facility.
No, they're being treated exactly the same. There is this beginning of the section is a limitation on benefits. But the fact that they set them out and felt compelled to set them out in two different subsections at least to me suggests that they're different things. Why isn't that the most logical reading of this?
Well, because, Your Honor, it sets out essentially different sentencings. It sets out if you are convicted or found to be guilty but insane, or if you are convicted or found to be guilty by reason of insanity. So it's more specific as to what the exact plea is, but that says nothing as to whether a mental institution.
But you wouldn't need any of that, a correctional facility already included that, right? Because that's in subpart 1AI. Or 1A1.
Well, Your Honor,
if your argument is correct, then 1A2 is completely superfluous.
Well, perhaps Congress in creating this statute or promulgating this statute was attempting to address the unique state law questions that Your Honor raised. There's different...
Well, if they did it there, shouldn't they do it here?
Perhaps, Your Honor, it would provide greater clarity, but just going back to looking at the plain language of the statute... The Black's Law Dictionary definition.
I think what's fatal to your argument, let's take St. Elizabeth's in the District of Columbia, which includes people who are committed as a result of criminal charges and pleas if not guilty by reason of insanity, and also includes civil commitment. I mean, St. Elizabeth's either has to be a correctional facility or it's not. And I don't see how it can be a correctional facility when it encompasses people who had nothing to do with the criminal justice system. You wouldn't say that someone who is suffering from a mental disability and is involuntarily committed was committed to a correctional facility. So how can St. Elizabeth's be a correctional facility if not everybody there is confined as a result of criminal proceedings?
Well, Your Honor, I think simply because a state mental institution can serve dual purposes, right? It can
serve... You mean sometimes it's a correctional facility and sometimes it's not?
I think that's correct, Your Honor. If someone is at the facility...
Look, the problem with that argument is you're asking us to look at the purpose for the confinement, not the definition of the institution. But Congress has not chosen to phrase the limitation on benefits based upon the purpose of the confinement. That is not in the language of the statute. It's an exclusion based upon the type of institution.
I would respectfully disagree with that, Your Honor, because Congress included the language in the statute for the conviction of a felony. And so Congress is not saying and has not said if you are involuntarily committed to a state mental institution, you are not eligible for TDIU.
Sure, but the rest of it talks about what kind of facilities that you're committed to. So you're still asking us to look at the purpose of the confinement to define the facility, which is different than the conviction of a felony language that you keep wanting to take us back to. That's not enough. If all they wanted to say was, you don't get benefits if you're confined in any type of institution because of conviction of a facility, they could have said that. Look, I don't have any doubt that the general purpose that they were going for here would, should probably cover people in this veteran situation. But they didn't use the language of the Social Security statute that would have clearly covered it. So why aren't you just bound by that?
Well, Your Honor, I think that if the statute were interpreted as narrowly as Mr. Philbrook would like, and it's limited to a jail or a prison, which is an obvious example of a correctional facility, Congress would have used the word jail or prison.
Yeah, but St. Elizabeth's is either a correctional facility or it's not. And you're saying sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't. And as Judge Hughes points out, the statute doesn't seem to suggest that a correctional facility can have different meanings depending on the purpose of the confinement. I mean, that's a simple problem. I don't think people think of St. Elizabeth's as a correctional facility.
But, Your Honor, if someone is confined there because they committed a felony crime, then they are in a facility for the purpose of treatment and they're being confined, they can't leave, they know they can't leave, and it's because they committed a crime. And so I understand sort of the intellectual distinction between calling people who are involuntarily committed to have served in a correctional facility.
What if you're involuntarily committed to a drug rehab center in lieu of being sentenced for a felony?
Involuntarily committed, then I think Your Honor's question would be limited by the language that says for conviction of a felony. But if a felon was convicted and the judge said, you must go to this particular institution, and that institution confines you for the purpose of treatment, then you meet the dictionary definition.
So you're convicted, you plead guilty, you take a felony, but instead of getting sent to jail, you get probation and a 180-day term in a drug rehab center. They don't give TDIU then, because a drug rehab center is a correctional facility.
Well, I think that would be different, Your Honor, because they're not confined there. If they're free to roam.
Involuntarily confined in a drug rehab center. They can't leave for 180 days under the terms of their probation agreement.
And the sentencing document said for the purpose of treatment, then yeah, the Black's Law Dictionary is plainly met. The dictionary that Mr. Philbrook puts forth, the Merriam-Webster's definition, is clearly met. And so I think Your Honors really don't need to look any further than the dictionary definition, which is fulfilled here. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Carpenter, you have 4 minutes here if you need it.
May it please the court, I have nothing further to add unless there's questions from the panel.
Okay, thank you. Thank both counsel. The case is submitted.